Hey, Downey, this is Horacio Ortiz, and I'm joined by Cynthia. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you. Yes.
This past weekend, we were at a prayer vigil, giving a little prayer to those that have been affected with everything that's going on. And that's where I got an opportunity to meet you. And I just want to say thank you so much for for coming on and helping me answer some questions, since some of my residents have been asking. This prayer vigil was very important for our community. We were joined by Councilmember Mara Trujillo. Dorothy Pemberton also went. Our mayor sent his wishes. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to go. But that was a great opportunity to give resources to our community. And oftentimes, my role is to give resources to those that need it. And I just want to give you thanks for coming on board and helping me give those resources to our community. So I just want to say thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. And it was a great vigil that Eric and Family Art and
Leticia
organized. I have been an attorney for 13 years, and I've had my own law firm. And so I've always had a very strong focus on know your rights for our community. And I think that's our most effective tool, especially in these times.
Yeah, these times have been very, very sad to see, to hear, and to witness what's going on in our communities. And so I think it's very important to give out information to our community. I know there's a lot of information going out there. We do have information on our websites and our Downey websites. But when I reached out to our residents, I asked them to give us some questions. So I'm hoping you can help me give them some responses to those questions. One of the main questions a lot of people asked is, how can they protect themselves at their home, their work, or even in public? So give us a little information how that works.
So right now we're seeing a lot of these operations happening in different ways. And so a person in their home is in the safest place possible because the home is the most constitutionally protected place. Officers are not allowed to enter the home without a warrant to enter. And if they had a warrant, they would probably, be knocking and tearing down the door, and they would go in because they had this warrant. So what we're asking the folks in public to do is to not open your door. Stay inside as much as possible. Have a resource of your neighbors to contact you in case they see suspicious activity outside of your door.
Can I ask a question about that warrant? So how would you know if it's an actual legalized warrant? Because sometimes people say that they're just going up there and giving it a paper, and sometimes residents don't know what's an actual signed warrant.
So, I think that one of the biggest warnings is that, these warrants have to be signed by a judge, and they would have a judicial that's why it's called a judicial warrant. So they would be signed by a judge. However, I think that the safest place for our community is to not have to decipher what it is or open the door slightly, because that could also be construed as consent to enter. Then we're just asking folks to just remain calm inside their home, remain calm. And as I mentioned, if they did have an actual warrant, they would be entering the home.
Okay. And then work, I have a business myself, and I have a lot of people that are just too scared to come in. I have one employee, unfortunately, that quit. His mom is undocumented, and she's has cancer. And so he says, I just don't feel safe right now coming into work. Hopefully you can give me the opportunity to come back after all this is settled down, and I'm there to support my staff. But how can I keep my staff or any other business owner safe? You see a lot of these raids going into car washes. I've seen somebody going to church, schools. Where's that red line? Where do we stop?
Yeah, so because places of business are still private property, then an employer, a business owner has the right to refuse entry. And they have a right to say, you cannot enter here without a warrant. They do have to have a warrant to enter spaces that are private. Because a lot of the businesses are public-private, then it's always best to designate certain areas, like the kitchen area, back offices, as private, and make sure you have notification, like you have signs that say it's private. If a ICE agent is at the door and you spot them as an employer, it's great to designate one specific spokesperson or person that's going to speak on behalf of the staff and the team. And then that person will be the one that directs them to not have entry into the establishment, to be able to say, if you don't have a warrant, you cannot enter. This is a private business. And then they have to leave. What we're seeing, though, also in happening right now in our community, is that they're going to places where there's that more public exposure. And so the car washes have a lot of our workers out in the public parking lot areas. And so as an employer, they can tell them to leave. But at that point, the car has already pulled in, grabbed workers and taken them away. So we just have to be more vigilant and careful about spaces that we use in our businesses and designating that public-private area, designating an employee to be the spokesperson every shift that you have, doing trainings to your staff as to what to do. And that would be the way that we can continue to try to have some sense of continuing on with our business and our livelihood.
It's here. Interesting. Like, it's where you see right now all the videos, it's happening in our car washes, Home Depot, public spaces, even then. So we can talk a little bit about the public spaces. We saw recently a major raid of someone biking across Old PH here in Downey, and we had a Downey resident record that incident, and they let them go. Do you know why they let him go, or what happened in that case? Public space is another place where they go in and they get individuals.
Right, and so generally a public place is not as protected by the Constitution. For example, if an officer wanted to look in the trash can and you left your trash can outside, they can go ahead and search that area. So we have to understand the dynamics of being in public is the most vulnerable for our community. People are out in the public with the least amount of rights. And then if they are questioned by an officer, and these ICE officers or bounty hunters, and they would be questioned as to where were they born, if they have identification, what is their legal status. We are also seeing or hearing that they're not asking them any questions and picking folks up. In the case of the older man that was on the bike who was detained, the community came and the community showed up and started to record them. And now that they were on video and they were being filmed, they were not going to be able to get away with the practices that they've been having in other places. And so you do have to meet a certain level of reasonable suspicion to stop the person, which is that you reasonably think that the person is undocumented or doesn't have status. And then to detain them, you need to have another layer of evidence that they're not. And so that typically comes from the person identifying themselves to not have status, the person saying that they were not born here, the person having identification from another country. So that would give the officers the next layer to arrest them and detain them and take them to their processing center. So that's why it is of the most importance to reserve your right to remain silent. And so whenever somebody is being questioned by authority agents, then the person has the right that if they're going to self-incriminate, they have the right to remain silent.
You hear that, Downey? Make sure that if you see anybody out there, please give that information out. It's really important that we help each other out, that we keep each other informed and know people their rights, because as someone in this position, we were informed that this is going to last for another few weeks, possibly mid-July or end of July, and it's just make sure that you know how to protect yourselves, your neighbors, and your families.
And that's where it's important if you have status. If you have status to be on the front lines of this situation and responding and the videos, all that information can then be used by an attorney or civil rights organizations to continue to push for the agents to identify themselves, for the agents to stop wearing masks, for us as a community to also know that we have these rights, even if you're with status or no status. a lot of our community members don't know that they have rights still. And so it's important for us to work collectively to protect those.
And you brought up an interesting, and you brought up bounty hunters and mm-hmm. and and those terms that a lot of people feel scared. So how do you know, really, in your experience and what are you seeing, that these are really ICE agents or federal agents, or are they contract, or how does that work? What who are these individuals?
Right. So generally, CBP officers and Homeland Security and ICE agents are in a specific uniform and they have a specific badge or information. What we're seeing now is more plainclothes officers who put on a vest. If it says police, it confuses our community, and you don't really know who they are. They're masking themselves up, and so right now we don't have that kind of security to know who these people are. There's a lot of fights going on, litigation going on in the courts, so that we can get down to the facts of who are these people, why are they in our communities, and what agency do they belong to. So at this point, the best thing a person can do is continue to pressure them. Where is your badge number? What is your name? Identify yourselves. And that would be the strongest tool we have, is to continue to put pressure on that, but recording the situations and scenarios so that we can continue to fight in the courts for these people to be able to identify.
I have two questions. So question one, for individuals that these agents or these bounty hunters go up to someone and they say, please identify yourself. Can the other person ask first, can you identify yourselves, or who has the authority to, or just remain silent from that moment on?
So if the person's undocumented, then we're asking folks to remain silent. Okay. Yes. But if there's individuals that have status and that are able to, be able to fight and advocate for their neighbors and the community members, then they should be the ones asking those questions. They should be the ones saying, show me your badge, show me your name, identify yourselves.
Yeah, I saw a video.
Most of the time they're not doing that. But again, this is all build up, because eventually this has to stop. We have rights in this country, and they just can't continue to do these things. So as the person that is being detained, if they are in a vulnerable position, they're undocumented, then it's better and safer for them to remain silent, because if there's nobody recording in that scenario, it's just very difficult. They're a lot of the tactics are aggressive. Very a lot aggressive. Of the tactics are aggressive towards community members, and so an individual without status should remain silent and let those that have status advocate around them, so that eventually they can leave, because I have been seeing that has been successful in many cases. They've been leaving.
And I know that a lot of our communities feel scared because they see police. And so mm-hmm. early on, when all this ICE raids were occurring, a lot of residents were like, was the Downey police involved in these ICE raids, or certain police departments are involved? And I can let my residents know, our police department is not involved in any immigration enforcement and any federal enforcement. And there's certain laws that are in place that prevent us from allowing us to do that. So just want to give that information out. And I know you said earlier, that this can't keep going on. We have our rights and everything. It seems to me like that these are targeted areas. So right now it's California. It's also Chicago, New York. Originally, it was just supposed to be just criminals. And we all can agree we want criminals off our streets. I think that would have helped a lot. But how did it get too far? Now we extended from this to all the way over here.
So what we've been seeing in the earlier months of the enforcement is that the propaganda and the slogans that immigrants are criminals isn't holding true. The numbers and facts don't match up. And so the enforcement numbers were steadily increasing, but they were not as predominant as they are now. Now they've reached upwards of 50,000. And so what is happening is that there's become a quota. Recently, there was a quota that the administration has put on the top ICE and CBP officials, that they must meet 3,000 arrests a day.
Wow, 3,000.
3,000 arrests a day. And I'm assuming that it's so that they can then reach to a million for this year. And so with that kind of pressure and that kind of enforcement and money and funding, then that's why we're seeing these tactics. So we're also seeing a direct attack on things that we have done in our community, in our sanctuary cities and states. And so SB 54 was the law that you mentioned here in California. And so our stance on being welcoming to immigrants and supporting our immigrant community, which is, you know, pretty much our family, our neighbors, our different members of the community, then that's what has fueled this. It fueled a very targeted effort to us.
Yeah. And right now we talked a lot about, you know, what happens or knowing our rights. Now let's get to the point, like, if you get detained.
Yes.
Is there any other information that you think it's imperative right now for knowing your rights? So let's just, this is before this is that occurs. Anything else that maybe we missed or?
Well, I think that as a community for many years, it's important that everybody know their particular immigration situation. So if a person's undocumented and they've never spoken to an attorney, it's imperative. It's important to have a consultation at least to an attorney or a nonprofit. And we can talk about the nonprofits that are working really tirelessly right now. But there is a place of where you stand in the whole immigration situation. Do you have a prior order of deportation? Then the Know Your Rights advocacy won't be as helpful because you may end up being deported. But if you are a person that's never been in the system and never been had anything filed with immigration, then it opens up avenues to continue to fight your case, not sign a voluntary deportation, see a judge, ask for a bond hearing, and fight to remain in the country to get a green card. And so it's very important to know the person's position. Where do you stand?
Where do you stand?
And at least know what happens if you are detained, what are the scenarios that could potentially happen in your case?
And then there's a lot of, I have some people also reach out. One of the questions is, well, I have a court case that's coming up next month. Should I even go? Because we're hearing stories that people are saying that once they go to court, they see ICE agents, they get detained. So how do we know that if you go to these court hearings for your immigration status, that you won't end up being detained?
Yeah, so it's best to always speak to an attorney. In immigration proceedings, if a person does not assist their court, they don't go to their court hearing, and they don't have a good cause, it's usually that they were hospitalized or, you know, someone passed away in their immediate family. Just very, it has to be a very, very good cause, reason. And they would, if they don't show up, the judge can order them deported because there's a certain regulation in immigration court that you have to go to your hearings.
Wow.
And you would get ordered deported in your absence. The person right now that has court should talk to an attorney or a nonprofit to seek whether they can do a motion for WebEx so they would appear online.
So they're safe. And
so they could be at home. They would also be able to potentially ask an attorney to do a motion to waive their presence so they don't have to assist and the attorney would go on their behalf. Or that they would be ready, that they would be prepared in case your case falls under this category and you are detained, they do dismiss your case, this is how you're going to be ready to be put into custody, what you're going to do once you're in custody, how you're going to fight your case while in custody or get bond. So there's right now a practice of going to court, and if the government dismisses your case and you're basically without any immigration case pending, then and you have less than 2 years in the U.S., they're typically grabbing that individual from outside in the hallway or outside of the courtroom and then taking them to ICE custody. So it is a very scary scenario,
very scary
situation. I've been in the courthouses. I've seen the ICE agents. They're roaming the hallways, and they have a list. But we won't have access to that. We only would find out the day of. But I think that's where prevention is the key.
And it's so unfortunate. It's like you go there hoping that you're following the laws and doing everything you can to ensure that you do what you're being told, and then out of a sudden you get detained. So it's important that you talk to your attorney and see what a nonprofit. Which leads up to another question that a lot of people ask. Unfortunate, we live in a world where sometimes there's bad actors, and these individuals take advantage of certain situations. How do you get informed of what organizations, nonprofits, lawyers, immigration lawyers that focus on immigration have not taken advantage of the system or know that they're credible?
Yes.
How do we help those people to figure out that?
Yes. So right now, for example, nonprofits, Immigrant Defenders is based in LA, and they are the leading immigrant advocacy group now. They have they're helping those who are detained. They're helping the unaccompanied minor children. And so Immigrant Defenders is one of the key resources that you would – they have a rapid response team available, and they also would have a list of reputable attorneys that if they cannot take the case, then the attorneys can assist. So that would be one of the nonprofits that I highly support. Carecen has been around for many years. Organizations like Carecen, a lot of the nonprofits have been decades helping our community. In terms of attorneys, it's important that we check our attorney's status on the State Bar website. So if they're licensed in California, you go to the California State Bar website, check their name, or if they gave you their bar number, then you would check whether they've had any disciplinary history. So you want to be able to see if they've ever had past issues with clients and the State Bar has reprimanded them. Another thing is to go with folks that are reputable in terms of like your community knows them, the community's recommending them, key folks from the community. Always also check their track record. Have they been an immigration attorney for how many years? How many years have they been focused on immigration?
That's also very important because there's a lot of attorneys that they take advantage. Well, I'm just speaking of what I've seen and hear is that they take advantage of those situations and they only practice immigration for such a little bit of time.
Or they might not. And so then, because right now we're also in an age of like content and social media. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to also vet that the person has been in immigration law for this many years, that you see them in the community, you see them helping clients, that they have a track record of success. Because also as an attorney, we're not able to, like, your attorney has to provide information that is true and honest. And so, you know, there's no way like an attorney can say like they've had a, you know, whatever percentage of success or whatnot, and if they're being dishonest. So you want to make sure that you're tracking the attorney's past records, what you've seen them post about, because they can only post things that are honest, and they can't post any misleading ads. And so in that respect, the attorney's track record is the most important tool to know as well what attorney you're dealing with and working with.
And going on to, before we get into what happens afterwards, I want to talk a little bit about the DACA recipients.
Yes.
A lot of people ask me, as a DACA recipient, am I protected? Should I be worried? And so what's your recommendation for those individuals?
Yeah, so right now the DACA recipients seemingly are protected under this court case that is still pending, and we still don't have a resolution as to whether DACA will stay or, you know, or be done with. But we are recommending DACA recipients speak to an attorney or nonprofit and look at other avenues. A lot of DACA recipients that received it in 2013, for example, that worked with my office, are now citizens because they were able to then apply through their spouses and then get their green card and get their citizenship. So as a DACA recipient, it's always useful and helpful that you start looking at other avenues, because DACA is also an executive action program. It's not a law. It's not, you know, meant to be permanent. And so I think that that's where, as a community, we also have to be affirmative as to finding other routes to get our status and talking to those that are experienced attorneys or the nonprofits to help guide you through that path.
And during those, when you speak to your attorney and you're trying to get citizenship, what is your review of the turnover rate of being a resident? Is it different based on scenarios, or is it a standard between 3 to 4 years? Just an example.
So the immigration process, there's always this talk about, you know, why didn't they fix, or why didn't they do it the right way and whatnot. And so the immigration system is very complicated because there hasn't been any significant laws changed since the 1980s.
You see right there, please call your senators, call your congressmen. There has not been any immigration reform in a long time. And this just proves, and this last few days and weeks, how important it is to have immigration reform, because we're tearing families apart, hurting local economy, and this can go on forever. So I think it's time that we let our voices be heard to our people who are representing us in Washington, because it's insane how we're not changing their narrative or helping better our immigration reform.
Yeah, like if we look at the history of immigration in the 1900s, 1920s, the Great Wave, it had the, you know, Ellis Island and put your name in this book and welcome to America. And so it has progressively become more about control and reforming, and reforming in a way of consequences. So basically telling folks, you know, you don't meet our standards, you must wait in line. For example, I'll give you this one. If I'm a U.S. citizen, my brother or sister, sibling is undocumented, and they're from Mexico. We're from Mexico. They're born in Mexico. And I petition them. The wait time approximately right now is 26 years.
Wow.
Of waiting for a visa to be available for them. And so this is what we have going on in our immigration system. A lack of response and the lack of putting immigration on the top of the agenda for a law, for reforma. And then we've moved into, in the 90s, became more about control and consequences. So in the 90s, there was a set of laws that changed to give people a 10-year ban if they entered the United States without permission. So if you entered the United States without permission, lived here for more than a year, if you wanted to fix, you would have to return to your home country and face 10 years of a ban.
Wow.
Unless you were eligible for a certain waiver. So the complexities of immigration law, we had to look at the history of it and why it's become more and more complicated and harder to get status.
I think the lack of doing something has made it worse and worse and worse throughout the years. Yeah. So it's unfortunate that we reached a point now, and we're going to remember this is going to be in history books.
Yeah.
And that's what breaks my heart. It's like, what am I going to tell my kids? Yeah. I want to tell my family. And it's just the lack of work that our people are doing up there in Washington.
I do talk to families, and there's several instances, many instances that I have to say, like, I don't have an option for you available because of the laws. So the laws are this way. Unfortunately, your case facts don't meet the requirements for any of these programs. And so, you know, you have to continue to wait for a reforma. But, you know, this is how long can we tell people to continue to wait for a reforma? When now we're seeing ICE in our communities doing all this enforcement. And also there's a category for victims of crimes. Those are victims of crimes that cooperate with authorities that testify against this perpetrator. The wait time is 7 to 10 years for them to get a U visa status. It's called a U visa. And so it's troubling that there is so much backlog in immigration. There's 3.7 million cases in immigration court pending.
Wow.
There's hundreds of thousands of people waiting for this U visa. Congress only allows 10,000 a year, so there's a backlog of many years. We need change, and this is why we're here. And now it's like it took the point where our community is being ripped apart for us to also, you know, really we have to work together to get some change possible.
Now that we talked a little bit about knowing your rights, now it's the next question. What happens when you're detained? What's the next process? Where do you find yourself?
So what is happening right now is immigration is doing the ICE is doing the roundups. Then they take them to their nearest processing center, downtown LA or to Santa Ana. And then the individual is then processed through with fingerprints done, photos. They do like somewhat of a mini interview about their immigration history, about their fear of returning back to their home country. And then at that point, they assess whether the person is able to go to a detention center and then fight their case. A lot of people, unfortunately, sign a voluntary deportation because they don't know their rights. They don't know if they qualify for anything. And then they end up being deported immediately. Or individuals may have a prior history and then they get deported as well immediately within hours if they're from Mexico, for example. And so it is a process that we've been seeing. A lot of families can't find their family members for 2 to 3 days. People are ending up in other states, in Texas in particular. They're ending up in Adelanto, which is north of, you know, Victorville area. And so it is a process where they're not in the system. We're having a hard time locating them. And then when we finally they're booked, then they usually will have a court date assigned in custody.
And is there any chance that if you do get detained, that they will let you go? By that time, I've heard or that some instances where they detain wrong people and they just, how does that, where does that work?
So there have been instances where they're detaining folks that have status, that they have a visa, they have a green card or citizenship. So typically then they should be releasing the person once they process them within the next day or so. But that person also has recourses to talk to a civil rights attorney and possibly file a civil rights claim against them, depending on the circumstances of why, you know, how they were detained and if they were at any point also hurt in that detention. But for family members that can't find their family and they're looking everywhere, they haven't heard from them, there is a website called the ICE Detainee Locator. And you would enter the person's name, their last name, their full name, and then their date of birth and their country of birth. And hopefully that would be updated. We've been seeing, though, that it's not updating very fast. Another resource is if the person has ever had an immigration history, they would have an A number already assigned to them. And so you would look up by A number. Or you could contact the different facilities to see if your family member is there.
Okay. Thank you so much. And this, I just want to take this last time to appreciate you coming here. I know it's been a stressful time for you. I can speak also as a council member for the city that it's been a troubling time for our community. And my role is to, like I said, is to give resources to our community, whichever way I can. I do want to give thanks to Art, Erica, and Leticia for opening the Reeves Mansion. It was a beautiful event filled with hope, prayer for our community. And I really hope that during this time with these resources that you've given to our community members, that people stay informed, give that information to the residents. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach us out. Everybody knows my number. It's 562-445-7572. You can also reach me at HORTIZJR at downeca.org. You can also reach out to our council members. We've been very vocal and we are here to help you out in whatever way we can. So please, community of Downey and everybody else in this country, please remain safe, keep your family safe, and protect each other. Thank you so much. Bye, Downey.